we present the News Quiz with your host, Miles Jupp.
We start with an item from the website of the British Cactus and Succulent Society, read by Susan Ray.
Our annual show was recently held at the Botanic Gardens in Glasgow. It was a good event, but disappointingly, the number of members showing was significantly fewer than in previous years.
Thanks to Sarah Wollstonecroft for sending that in. Now, let's meet the teams. Will you welcome first, on my right, Francis Ween and Holly Walsh. And opposite them, on my left, Kerry Godliman and Jeremy Hardy. Francis, who has left over us leaving?
I think this is a very cryptic reference to that chap called... No, he's not called Clive Dunn. That was some... it's the other one. Clive Lewis. The shadow...
Let's stick with Lewis. Secretary.
Who had to resign from the shadow cabinet. Well, he didn't have to, actually. He could perfectly well have carried on, but he did resign. Very nobly, but didn't spoil Jeremy Corbyn's little triumph, his little victory, because Corbyn was on the winning side in a parliamentary vote. Admittedly, he had to vote with the government to achieve this, but still, it's a start. And he issued one of his hilarious three-line whips, basically from the man who holds the Commonwealth all-comers freestyle record for voting against Labour whips. But anyway, with a straight face, somehow he keeps a straight face and says to his shadow ministers, three-line whip, I'm afraid, and you're going to have to vote for it or resign. And so Clive Lewis, among others, said, all right then, OK, off I go. Although it was quite surreal, the whole thing, because quite a lot of people haven't resigned yet and they still voted against him, but if they didn't resign themselves, as far as I know, he hasn't yet actually sacked them. And it included three actual Labour whips who voted against Jeremy Corbyn's whip. He's accepted a few resignations, but he can't actually accept all their resignations, otherwise he won't have a shadow cabinet, because they are rather running out of Labour MPs to serve in it, because they've all found one reason or another to resign in recent months.
Do you think Clive Lewis was sort of setting an example by resigning then?
Well, it's odd, because Clive Lewis didn't resign on the second reading, but then he rebelled on the third reading. But it's very hard. Parliamentary procedure is a bit of a mystery, because Corbyn, after the vote, put out a tweet saying, "The real fight starts now." After the bill has gone through all its House of Commons stages. Well, actually, he's done very well, because he did two great things. One was he managed to cure Diane Abbott. He managed to heal her. She emerged from her bed of pain and voted for his whip. She was whipped into the lobbies by him. And the other thing was he did have a little triumph at Prime Minister's Questions, because he caught Theresa May unawares. He had a little scoop up his sleeve. And it was that there had been a sweetheart deal in Surrey. And she didn't know about this, she claimed. And all she could do was, she's really bad if he catches her unbriefed or something. All she can do is say, well, I lead my party, he doesn't. Or something like that. Or, I'm Prime Minister, he isn't. She's not terribly good at the spontaneous stuff. But anyway, he'd found these leaked texts from Surrey.
Yeah, does anyone know what they were thinking of holding in Surrey?
It was to do with a referendum, because Surrey County Council, whose leader is a Tory but is very, very critical of the government, was going to hold a referendum to have a huge, I think, 15% rise in the council tax to pay for social care, elderly care and stuff. The government thought this would be rather embarrassing, Tory council basically implicitly admitting that there was a financial crisis in social care. And Jeremy Corbyn says that they did a deal with the government about business rates by saying it's all right, you can pay for it from the business rates and you won't have to have your referendum on your council tax rise and no one need ever know that there's a problem with social care. And that was the sweetheart deal. It was all done in text messages, which were brilliantly sent to the wrong person.
Why is it called a sweetheart deal? Is that a new thing
now? It's such a romantic term for such a boring thing. Yeah. If I had a sweetheart, like on Valentine's Day, I really hope that when my husband says he's got something for me, it's not 15% extra on my council tax.
I don't think Theresa May's enjoying being Prime Minister any more than Jeremy Corbyn's enjoying being Leader of the Opposition. She just seems so mournful. Not that I care, but she does just seem so forlorn. She makes Gordon Brown look like a little ray of sunshine, but...
It'll be easier for Corbyn to pick new people for his shadow cabinet, because the numbers are getting less to pick from. Yeah. It's going to be a quicker selection process.
It's the difference.
Who hasn't done it? Hands up.
It's like looking at the lunch menu rather than a sort of a la carte, isn't it? He's just, well, there's only three of each.
Menu, yeah. You know what I thought was the best thing? Some critic levelled at Corbyn saying that he was writing the government blank cheques, which was such a smart thing to say, because of course Corbyn still uses cheques.
He knows how to work a screen grab. I'm impressed. I can't do a screen grab. How do you do a screen grab? Every time I try and do one, I just turn my phone off.
What you do, you go in a photo kiosk and you hold your phone and then you wait. Just have patience.
Or you just photocopy the screen of your phone.
Get someone to take a
you
Polaroid.
You get some greaseproof paper and a pencil. We used to do when we had Amstrads. That's what you had to do. Instead of printing it out, you had to get some tracing paper.
What is the evidence for him knowing how to... I mean, this is extraordinary political gossip, that he knows how to screen
grab. Because
he
had a screen grab of the texts that were from the bloke in Surrey.
What, that he just waved... Well, someone else had done that for him.
He does have a grab waller who does that sort of thing for him.
It does make me laugh, though, you're right. Exactly what you said, Kerry, that he doesn't have that many people left. It's like when a man's going bald and he just tries to sort of have a comb over and reshuffle his hair. Just to make it look more convincing, like hair coverage, when really there's just
he's gonna
no
have
one
to
left.
Stretch it out. That
I think just shave it off.
Get plugs.
Yeah, get plugs or shave it off.
Shave his front bench. What do you think? Do you think Jeremy? No, no. Come on now.
You're being smutty now, aren't you?
No, I'm not. Not deliberately. It's just the way that.
What? What are you looking at me for?
Well, just sort of general guidance in life. Is Clive Lewis manoeuvring, do you think, for a leadership bid?
No, I don't think he's manoeuvring. I think he'd probably be the next Labour leader, but I don't think he's manoeuvring. You never know, though, now, do you? You never know what might happen. If last year taught us anything, is that none of us know anything about what might happen, and that pollsters deserve as much professional respect as aromatherapists.
Surreptitiously, this is the news that the Article 50 bill has cleared the Commons after opposition parties failed to pass any amendments. Clive Lewis, MP, resigned from the Labour front bench in order to vote against his party's position. Lewis said he had to vote against Article 50 because Brexit poses a threat to his constituency in Norwich, although arguably not as much of a threat as coastal erosion and the simple march of progress. Jeremy Corbyn reshuffled his cabinet, which now consists entirely of Diane Abbott and Emily Thornberry in various disguises. Also in Parliament this week, allegations surfaced that Surrey County Council may have done a sweetheart deal with the government over council tax. Surrey have now cancelled plans for a referendum on a 15% council tax rise, which seems a shame. If there's one thing we know about referendums, they always create opportunities for adult discussion and leave the world a gentler, happier place. 2 points to Francis. Holly, which speaker may have spoken out of turn?
Oh, this is such a brilliant British issue, isn't it? This is a prime example of British awkwardness in that Theresa May did what lots of us have done on holiday. She went to America and she met this lovely couple called Donald and Melania. She had a couple of Long Island iced teas and was like, oh, if you're ever over in the UK, you should just pop in on a state visit. She's like, I know the Queen, I'll get you tea, you know, we'll have a banquet, maybe let off a ceremonial cannon, it'll be a laugh. And she forgot all about it until she got back to the UK. And then, of course, Donald basically got his people to call and say that state visit would be a wonderful thing. We'd love to come. That would be brilliant. So now she's slightly panicking because nobody is that keen on it, and particularly John Bercow, the Speaker of the House of Commons, who he's not happy at all. Because he says that Donald Trump is a sexist and a racist. And to be honest, I think it's just snobbery, because Donald Trump is a nouveau sexist, racist millionaire. And the Parliament is generally full of old school sexist, racist millionaires. I don't understand is why he had to say anything. Like, why did John Bercow feel the need to say anything? What he should have done is the traditional British response to this, like my father does the whole time, which is my mum will invite some people round and my dad will stick around for the first sort of 10 minutes and then he'll just go out to the shed till they leave. So I think it's a bit presumptuous to think that he would want to come over and do a speech at, Westminster?
He wants to, though, doesn't
yeah,
he?
Of course
he
does. I don't think he does.
He's like, oh, you let Mugabe no, and Putin, let me in.
Not in Westminster Hall, which is what they were talking about, which is the most unblingy place ever. If you've ever been to Westminster Hall, it's just this sort of dusty stone chamber. He wants to go to somewhere like the Royal Gallery, which is proper gold bling. Mm. And he can still go there, because Burko can't stop him.
He likes the sort of pomp and... So he'd like to be sort of part of the changing of the guard.
I mean, they've had people, pretty horrible people. They've had Putin, they've had Simon Cowell addressed. But at least people are now saying, well, maybe we shouldn't have these people. You know, better late than never. It's like, I mean, that petition that said it will embarrass the Queen if he comes over. And I thought, I don't think she's that picky. I mean...
I signed that petition. I'm signing a lot of petitions. It's quite stressful, all the petitions. I have to get up half an hour earlier now to sign. I'm worried that I'm going to get them all a bit mixed up because I'm worried about bees and refugees and LGBT bees. And I can't keep up with... I'm not coping with the news at the moment, Miles, to be honest. I've taken up colouring in. I do a lot of colouring in.
You colour in petitions and things like that?
I am not colouring in petitions. It hasn't got that bad. I don't know what you do with the colouring in books when you've finished... What are you supposed to do with the colouring in books?
I've not jumped on aboard this
hobby.
Well,
I recommend it. It's really calming.
Well, when you finish... I suppose check to see if you're feeling better when you've finished. I suppose that would be the first
thing. Can't you sell them off as ready-coloured books? For the time-poor child.
Yes, well, the busy, busy child with a lot on. Pre-coloured-in books.
That way they will learn about lines and crayon.
You're right, that's a brilliant
idea. That is one very weird thing about kids. You think, look, plainly there's a line there which you shouldn't go beyond. That line there, that's the edge. And plainly a house doesn't just... Most houses don't have functioning chimneys anymore. Very few of them are square. And the sky isn't just a blue line. But try telling that to a five-year-old. Flipping idiots. No wonder we have to send them to school.
How was it greeted then, John Bercow, when he made this speech? How did
some
it go down?
Some people clapped and some people booed. It's weird, isn't it? The will of the people is a very
are they supposed
mixed
to clap?
Thing.
Do you know?
Are they not meant to clap?
They are not meant to clap.
Oh, well, they did. They properly clapped. They went panto. But everything's changed now.
They do all sorts. They do high fives and things in the Lords and stuff like
yes,
that.
Yes, it's all changed.
I like John Bercow. I like him because he's even shorter and less socially skilled than me.
How are they meant to respond to things in the... What are they actually allowed to do in the Commons?
They can say hear.
They can actually say hear. That's right.
Why are you allowed to say hear, but not clap?
You can't clap, no, but they do these days. It's poor show.
Can they stamp their feet?
They can wave their order papers.
Well, that's soundless.
They can click their fingers like in jazz clubs.
If I heard that somebody didn't want me to go to their house, I probably wouldn't want to go.
Yeah, but it's Donald Trump. All bets are off.
Yeah. Have you heard that someone doesn't want them to go to their house? They do. That is a fact. They really. In fact, I would be one of the best people at going to their house.
Right,
that
is.
If you said you didn't want him there, he'd be up your front path before you could. You'd see him sniffing round your bins, sticking his head in your cat flap.
Unwaveringly, this is the story of brave little engine that could, Common Speaker John Bercow, who, with little thought for his own safety or the masses of attendant publicity, stood up to say he did not think Donald Trump should be allowed to address Parliament during his upcoming state visit. Mr. Bercow claimed he can do this because he's one of the three key holders to Westminster Hall, alongside the Lord Great Chamberlain and Rebecca, the nice lady who lives down the road and pops around when everyone else is away to feed the SNP. Mr. Bercow has been accused of hypocrisy after several pictures of him welcoming the Chinese Premier, the Emir of Kuwait and the Saudi Arabian King to Westminster Hall emerged, as well as a charming snap of him doing karaoke with Slobodan Milosevic and shots with that woman who put the cat in the bin. Mr. Bercow hit back by saying that in intervening he had acted honestly and honourably, and if the masses were now referring to him as the people's princess, that was a burden he'd have to bear. 2 points to Holly. Kerry, who's papering over the cracks in the housing market?
This is a white paper that came out this week about fixing our broken housing market. And everyone was very excited about it because they thought it was going to have lots of solutions, and it didn't have any solution. Well, it did have, like, if you fold it into a little boat and put it on your head, it keeps the rain off for the best part of 10 minutes. For a lot of people, even the phrase affordable housing is a bit of an oxymoron in this country, so everyone was quite excited, thinking it might have some, you know, proper answers for people that see owning a home as a distant dream. They did have some ideas. They were talking about space and how we approach use of space and downsizing and things like that. There is sort of suggesting maybe people, could they live in a box or a kennel or those storage units. There's a lot of storage units, aren't there? People could live in them because they're only full of junk.
Yeah.
Yeah, people are like, got, you know, baby chairs in there. They're like, oh, I might have another baby. You're like, well, you're not, you're 64. You're not going to have another baby. So you could clear that out and put your kids in there. There are possible solutions. We just have to think a different way, don't we, about how we use space.
Just get much smaller things and just little... Like in IKEA, they have little miniature things for children. If we just had that, our places would look much bigger, wouldn't they? And if we... And, in fact, if people were smaller. This is the mistake that big people are making. They're filling up our space.
Don't open your arms
in a strange, no, empowering gesture. Keep hunched, like a true Englishman. Broken is such a cowardly word, isn't it? Because it's like when they talked about broken Britain. They say, oh, well, we'd like to sort housing out, but it's broken. We don't know what happened. It was like that when we found it. It was.
But it's mainly our fault. By our, I mean senior citizens.
Oh, yeah.
He says, looking nervously about, oh, well, my fault. All right. It's senior citizens who are to blame because they haven't downsized.
Yeah, you need to downsize.
The trouble is, when you get to my age, you feel so lethargic. The last thing you want to do is move house. All I can do to get out of bed in the morning is make coffee.
It's a bit hard to sort of put the arm on people to downsize, isn't it? Don't you think you'd be a bit more comfortable living in a wheelie bin? There are some lovely underground apartments up at the cemetery. Just put old people on cruises and don't bring them back. You could squat all their places and then cruise ships would basically become sort of luxury prison ships.
Like a saga prison ship.
People where they can go and make, you know, put jigsaws together in the fjords.
It's difficult, though, because I'm, you know, we're trying to buy a house at the moment and it's so hard because, specifically our situation is we're in a chain, so the people above us, they have to wait for their mortgage to, you know, sort out, and I have to wait for my parents to die. It's so hard. It's ridiculous when your financial planning depends on a cold snap.
Do you find yourself looking at the sort of BBC weather forecasts?
Is going, oh, my gosh, we could have a house by the summer! Your asthma's getting a bit bad, Mum. No, she's...
But also, if they built on just 2% of the green belt, just 2%, that would be enough for 1 million homes. I mean, what's so good about the green belt?
It means you're mildly good at judo, I think. But there's lots of empty space in the country. People go, oh, it's terrible, isn't it? Can't have any more immigrants in the country. Oh, no. Oh, because there's no room in Britain. Oh, no, we're full. A friend of mine came back from holiday the other day and someone else fell in the sea. There's tons of room in Britain. There's all sorts of...
You can't say that because the likes of you refuse to move out to the country and make room for these immigrants who want to come and move into a city. Until you downsize and get out to the sticks... Live in a field.
Oh, yeah, but we've got less room in the
city. You're a bed blocker, basically.
Well, that's true. Yeah, that's true. I am the sort of bed
Jeremy blocker. Couldn't move. He'd just get picked off by a hawk within 2 minutes.
There must be lots of empty property in lots of cities that is owned by people that don't live here, and they buy it and they'll sell it again in 10 years. They don't have any need. People, like, you used to squat, didn't you, Jeremy?
Yes, I did.
It's perfectly straightforward.
I had the knees for it then.
Where did you squat?
I squatted in La Vita House, which was built when Stanley Baldwin was a housing minister in the 1920s. It's next to what's now the British Library, which was St Pancras Bus Garage.
Mm. Oh, I was a nice spot. I squatted in Catford.
I watched a brilliant documentary this week on squatting in Brixton, and I think Jeremy Corbyn's brother was on it. He's now a long-range weather forecaster.
Oh, you need to get in touch with him, find out when the cold snaps.
Now, he was the king of the squatters. When I was a squatter in 1973 in West London, people said, oh, do you know Piers Corbyn? It was the first time I ever heard the name Corbyn. Little did I imagine that there was an even more famous brother waiting in the wings for the 40 years to leap out and amaze us all.
So has every panellist squatted upon... Have you squatted, Holly?
I went camping once. Does that count?
For the purpose of this programme, it certainly does. Feasibly, this is the government's housing white paper announced by Secretary of State for Communities, Sajid Javid, who said this week that the housing market is broken. Well, it's all a matter of perspective. If you're the new Duke of Westminster, you probably think it's working beautifully. Arguably, couldn't be better. If someone asked you to suggest any improvements, you'd probably say, you know what, leave it absolutely as is. Javid said there was no single bullet that would solve the crisis unless you stood all the private landlords in a straight line and got incredibly lucky. Proposed plans in the white paper include giving older people incentives to move out of underused big homes, such as advance notice that a nudist black gay couple might be moving in next door. 2 points to Kerry. And at the end of round one, the scores are Francis and Holly have 5, and so too to Kerry and Jeremy. We start round two with an announcement on the website of a Cambridge farm shop.
Have you noticed the new friendly face behind the counter? Let us introduce you to Ian. He's a self-proclaimed people person with over 20 years of butchery experience.
Our thanks to Judith Clayton for sending us that. Jeremy, who may be charged before they're discharged?
Oh, foreign people. Foreign people are to blame for things, as always. This is the problems of the NHS are apparently to do with foreign people. It's nothing to do with chronic underfunding and understaffing and constant reorganisation and the fact that British people are basically not helping in that we are clumsy, drunken diabetics who treat our bodies as landfill sites. none of that is to do with the crisis in the NHS. It's nothing to do with the fact that social care is in collapse and people are waiting in beds because local authorities don't know where to put them. Nothing to do with that. Foreign people are causing all the shortages. If you go into any hospital, can you find a stethoscope or a uniform? No, some foreign bastard is using it. You cut off. But specifically, apparently, it's foreign health tourism. Clearly, some people come here just for a holiday and become ill. They save up for the holiday of a lifetime in London, and within a few days, they've lost the will to live. They're listless, they're anxious, they're malnourished, they're short of breath, and so they have to go into hospital for no fault of their own. But there are other people who deliberately become ill just so they can come here and we have to spend money on... It makes you sick, doesn't it? And if foreign people just stopped coming to this country, we would save a thousandth of the bill in our NHS, which would have no staff.
It does make me laugh that they call it health tourism, because that sort of suggests that there is a lovely trip involved. You're like, It's like, how have you been the last 2 weeks? Oh, I just had the most wonderful hysterectomy staycation. Or someone's like, oh, yeah, man, I did a gap year. It was like a coma, and it was just great.
They'll have to spend a fortune, won't they, on trying... Like, someone's got to do the collecting of the money, because what they do now is they invoice the person after the treatment, but they're going to change it so that they get the money out of them before the treatment. It seems very complicated. There are all these variables about what makes a health tourist. And people say, well, you can't actually identify them because there's lots of different... But if someone's standing at Heathrow in a sombrero with a dialysis machine... I reckon they're a health tourist.
It seems odd that people would sort of do these things sort of deliberately, doesn't it? The health tour... I've been coming to Britain for operations or whatever would seem to be like one of the most extreme sort of sports or whatever, where some people like to go kite surfing or whatever. I'm going to go and have a triple bypass in a chronically underfunded hospital. NHS hospitals in England will have a legal duty to charge some overseas patients up front for non-urgent care. There's a suggestion that there will be card readers at the bedside, which at least removes the awkward bit of the evening when you can't catch your surgeon's eye to ask for the bill. And with large-scale disasters, you get all the awkwardness that comes whenever any large group of people have to split a bill. You're in one frankly minor plane wreck and suddenly it's all, well, I'm sure I didn't have the kidney transplant. I share the liver. The underlying fear is that this is the slippery slope leading to a world where all treatment is paid for at the point of use and hospitals become something akin to grotesque supermarkets. And frankly, nobody laid low with a urinary tract infection suddenly wants to discover that they have to pay 5p a bag. 2 points to Jeremy. Francis, have a listen to this. How dreadful. Francis, which gull could be culled?
It was all started by a chap in Plymouth who was sitting by the sea eating a bag of chips, and a seagull swooped down and ate one of his chips, pinched it, and he was so annoyed he went to his local Tory MP, a man called Oliver Colville, who was shocked and rushed up to London and demanded a debate in Westminster about it, which took place this week. And he said there had to be an urgent crackdown on seagulls before it got out of hand. He said, if we don't do something, if the government doesn't do something, there are going to be gull wars on the streets of Britain this summer. And it was the most extraordinary debate, all these MPs popping up and saying that in, I think, Berwick-on-Tweed, there are now vigilante gangs who've armed themselves, who roam the streets gunning down seagulls. And there was a story about a seagull that had killed a tortoise a few years ago. It dived into someone's back garden, flipped their tortoise over onto its back, and then just pecked its stomach until it died. That was a few years ago. So obviously a massive threat. And David Cameron, the pinching thing. David Cameron, when he was on holiday in Cornwall a couple of years ago, the ham was pinched from his sandwich by a seagull. And he actually at the time was very good about it, very magnanimous, and said he didn't have a grudge against all seagulls. He'd like to point out that most of them were law-abiding, peaceful creatures, and it was just a small minority who'd been radicalised and were angry and destructive, but they do have to be cracked down on, and so they're just swooping around, getting more and more violent and terrorising poor people eating chips and sometimes ice creams, I think, they nick as well, don't they? I mean, they really...
You've got to have a pudding.
Pasties, yeah. They'll take it. They'll take a pasty off you.
In Sidmouth, they spent £15,000 on super falcons to deal with.
I just remembered, I used to work in a big office and they had a huge problem with pigeons, and they had this guy who was a professional. He had a hawk and he came down to
scare them off.
Yeah, but this guy was so hot. And we used to, like, literally, like, Diet Coke break, just, like, rows of women watching the hawk guy as he, like, let off his bird. And it was just so weird, just watching this really attractive man, and then also in the periphery of your eye, just seeing this hawk, like, tear the head off a pigeon. It was, like, so... such an extreme
really
sexual experience. I can't watch a hawk rip the head off a pigeon now without feeling a little bit horny.
Falconry is a sort of sexy job.
It's a very sexy job, yeah.
Just sort of people wearing one big glove and holding some old bacon in their hands.
You
think, oh, I like that.
Literally, look at that dude. Any woman here, if a man walked into a club with a falcon on his arm...
It's weird, because when you book a stripper, they never offer up a bloke with a glove on his arm.
No.
You need to go one of the more niche ones. They've got sort of like the sort of mainstream strippers.
Like a hipster stripper.
The ones, yeah, it's the sort of emergency services stuff. But you can get more niche ones for people who come as like falconry people or like people who work for Rent-A-Kill. Cloyingly, these are the proposed regulations to make new buildings seagull-proof. Oliver Colville MP told a debate in Westminster that he was prompted to address the issue by a friend who had his chips stolen by a seagull. I suppose sometimes it just takes a tragedy of that magnitude to find out who you truly are. Seagulls have been blamed in the past for killing a dog and a tortoise, as well as controlling the world's money supply. I do understand how dangerous they can be, but will it stop me putting a tray of chips in the hood of my grandmother's coat? It will not. 2 points. 2 points to Francis. Holly, who has netted some money?
This is the story of netball, which is something that's very close to my heart, as I today spent the whole day in hospital with a broken finger from fingering a ball. That's what happened. A ball hit my finger, and now I have two fractures. So it's a contact sport. It's a very serious game. Don't enter it unless you've got a single leather glove. But the government apparently are putting £17 million into encouraging people to play more netball as adults, which is just ridiculous, I think. Because I think rather than invest £17 million into the game of netball, they should just give £17 million to a single player. get them to buy a Lamborghini, you know, spend a lot of time in nightclubs, just like every Premiership footballer you've ever seen, just so people can be like, I think I'd like to get into netball. That looks pretty incredible. I mean, like, just think of that sort of bling lifestyle you could have as a professional netballer.
For 17 million, they could buy David Beckham and then just make him play netball, couldn't they? If you won the Euro Millions, you could just buy a footballer and just make him just run around in your house, couldn't you? Just go and kick a ball against that wall for 4 hours. Oh, God. We'd have to, because you'd have bought him.
You promised him a night he'd do it.
You would. isn't netball just sort of racist basketball?
No.
What is it? What's the difference?
What do you mean racist basketball?
Well, because it's all white people from Guildford. No, what's...
I hated it. I hated netball. I stopped playing the minute I developed other hobbies like smoking.
Right.
I don't. It's quite an aggressive game, isn't it? Like, it's very, very aggressive. People doing a Nazi salute in your face when you're trying to score a goal. Yeah.
It does seem a bit regressive, Holly, that you've started doing something that you no longer have to do.
Right.
Because you're an adult. I mean, do you have assembly and stuff now?
No.
You bet your husband say, play. Good morning, Holly. Good morning, everybody.
Play the triangle.
It is funny. It's like that thing, you know, when people say, oh, God, I've regressed to being a teenager. People think you just started smoking and sleeping around. But in reality, I'm just playing netball. That's what I do.
But isn't it... It's one of those sports that just means that you win if you're the tallest person, isn't it?
No, that's not true.
Isn't it?
No, because I'm not very tall. Well, but I don't win, that's true. I just...
You've broken your finger,
so
small.
Yeah, I did break my finger.
Do you play for a team then, or is it just a bunch of you that...
It's a bunch of us.
Yeah.
And we meet in a school hall, and we just play for an hour. It's pretty...
Until the caretaker throws you out.
Have you got any netball past, Francis?
No, I was slightly worried to see that they said the government is spending all this money to try and lure women into playing netball. Odd choice of word. It sounded a bit creepy and Donald Trumpish, luring women into netball. But also, I just can't understand why they couldn't encourage women to play cricket instead. Save lots of trouble. Play a proper game. I mean, netball is to basketball, isn't it? As rounders is to baseball.
Well, people say that. They go, you know, the American does it better. They've got baseball, you know, and we've got rounders and they've got basketball and we've got netball and, you know, they've got ultimate frisbee and we've got self-respect. But... It's not comparable. It's a completely different sport. Like, it really genuinely is a fun sport to play, and I would, you know...
Are you working for the government?
Yes, I am. I paid £17 million to come on this radio show.
Could you be the netball czar?
I'd love to... the sports czar.
You'd be a rubbish czar. You broke your finger fingering a ball. Yeah.
Panophobically, this is the £17 million set aside by the government to encourage women to return to the joy that is netball, and in part to help us prepare for the Netball World Cup. And when you hear there's a Netball World Cup, it's impossible not to feel that Grandstand was cancelled way too early. Netball has been one of the biggest beneficiaries of funding from Sport England in what is thought to be a covert move to revive Britain's ailing bib industry. I've always been attracted to netballers, but then I love anything in a bib. You should see me in a lobster restaurant. No diner is safe. Plans include the Netball Now programme, which allows women to turn up to play netball without committing to a long-term arrangement, whereas previously, if women played just one game, they were locked in a netball tower and could only free themselves once they'd grown their plaits long enough. I must confess, I never understood the rules of netball, but that has never stopped me turning up to watch my daughter play each week, six-pack under the arm, to scream abuse at the referee. Mrs. Williams, 2 points to Holly. Kerry, where will it soon be a case of lights, camera, education?
Well, they are bringing in a new thing where teachers will wear a little camera so that they can, you know, record children that are naughty, and then it will be used as evidence against them. So it's a sort of disciplining strategy, which seems like a strange idea to me, because kids love being on camera, don't they? My kids love being on camera. Everything they do, they're like, video me, take a video of me, take a video. Every video ends with them walking towards the camera going, can I watch the video? I don't understand how it's supposed to be a deterrent. It could be a way of monetising teaching. They can boost their income, because if anyone falls into a whiteboard or Pratt falls over, you could get £250 from a Are You Being Framed? Not like...
Are You Being Framed? Like the 70s version.
That was really... I really couldn't style that out. That was a terrible blunder.
Usually presented by the West Midlands Serious Crime Scene.
What do I mean?
Are you being framed?
Let's pitch that.
It's just lots of 70s entertainers. He's asking each other, are you being framed?
Are you being framed? I think that is a brilliant idea for a programme, are you being framed? Yeah, so it'll all be a bit X Factory, won't it? Kids playing off each other, being naughty and being like, oh, I'm going to do my geography homework for my nan. I'm doing it for the family, you know. It's like a weird... It's just a weird incentive. And also, they're going to be on all the time, but they're not recording all the time. So it's only when the teacher presses record that it's actually recording. And that's not going to work out. Because people are never fully sure when it's on. How many times have you taken a photo, but it's actually a little video, and there's your voice going, oh, I think I'm making a video. And then if they leave it on for the whole rest of the afternoon after home time, you'll have all this footage of teachers crying in the car. Going, I really wish I'd made better life choices. I don't think it's going to work out.
Given that I've never met a teacher who could handle an overhead projector, I think...
It could be an incentive for teacher promotion, couldn't it? Because it'd be like, well, you can't become a head unless you've got several million YouTube hits. Anyway, there's always been different ways of dealing with discipline in schools, hasn't there? Like, in olden times, you used to beat them with sticks. And then, when I was at school, it was intense sarcasm. Like, teacher, you'd be like, sir, can I go to the toilet? Say, I don't know, Kerry. Can you go?
Demotically, this is the news that two secondary schools will be trialling a scheme where teachers wear body-mounted cameras to deter bad behaviour. The old saying, those who can do, those who can't teach, and those that can't teach film violent children on their mounted body cameras. It doesn't mean every sixth former will be able to leave with a highlights reel of their most grievous offences. Well, Martin, you've been excluded six times and left the head of religious studies in a coma. Let's have a look at your best bits. This will replace the current system where a classroom artist is employed to render any instance of violence quickly and accurately in a simple woodcut. The new cameras will be body-mounted on the teacher, as I seem to remember were several of the girls in the sixth form. Hello, Mr. Radcliffe. Hope you've conquered those urges by now, and if not, I'm sorry I named you. 2 points to Kerry. Jeremy, who shouldn't have been making money from the honey?
Well, it turns out that Manuka... Is that how you say it, Manuka? Manuka honey often isn't. It's just honey. Rather like Manuka honey. it's honey from bees. But people like Manuka honey because it's from special magic bees. They go to the special magic Manuka bush in New Zealand. But the thing is, if you put Manuka on the jar, people will buy it. And because it's got lots of properties, rather like the people who sell it. And people buy it because it's supposed to be brilliant for you. And so people who suffer from chronic suggestibility will pay for this as a gift for their hypnotist. And they'll eat a spoonful of it, or they'll put it on a cut or something like that. And they don't need, and actually, but the thing is, as long as you put Manuka honey on the label, it could be any old toot.
Is this going to affect your life, Francis?
No, not the least, because I don't buy Manuka honey at all.
Do you like honey?
Well, I was put off it at a very early stage when I first heard of it because it was being recommended by people like Gwyneth Paltrow, I think. And I've always found a sound rule in life. If Gwyneth Paltrow recommends something, you should avoid it at all costs, whether it's Manuka honey or the music of Coldplay.
Portland and Masons have had to clear all their shelves because of this scandal.
Well, they don't. They sell other stuff.
Fake things are still things, aren't they? People say, oh, no, I think my Calvin Klein's might be counterfeit. They're pants. Does it matter? How are you going to tell if your pants are counterfeit? You're going to hold them up to the light and see the watermark.
Heuristically, this is the appalling allegation in a report in the Sunday Times that Fortnum and Mason have cleared their shelves of Manuka honey after tests showed that it may not be genuine. It's not the fake honey that upsets me, it's the deceit of the bees themselves. This is the worst scandal in Fortnum and Mason's history since one of the checkout girls mistakenly addressed the Duke of Bedford as a baronet. It was all swept under the rug, of course, because she was a Mitford. Anyway, I tend to assume that everything in a grocery store is fake, from the produce to the claims of the assistants that they are happy to help. 2 points to Jeremy. Before we reveal the final scores, has anybody got a cutting they'd like to share? Francis.
Yes, Miles. This is from my local paper, the Dunmow Broadcast. Thanks to James Bogey for pointing it out to me. High Street, one of the five best inland. Dunmow High Street has been named as one of the top five in the country, which, if you live there, would surprise you a bit, but there we are. It was chosen from 900 entries in the Great British High Street Awards. In their application, the Dunmow town team explained why Dunmow is alive and thriving, mentioning the Shop Local, Shop Dunmow campaign, and the new defibrillator.
Polly.
This is from Joe Pullen, and it's a marketing email from Brighton Dome, and it says, now on sale at Brighton Dome, stand up for refugees and Leslie Garrett.
Kerry.
This is an advert for a cake delivery service spotted by James Biles. Baby, it's cold outside, but there's no need to go out for afternoon tea. You can have it all delivered to your door. Delivery includes sandwiches, cakes, scones, jam, and all the cockery.
Jeremy.
Debbie Jones received this update on her work intranet. Unfortunately, due to sickness, we are unable to host today's boosting immunity seminar.
Thank you. And now let's take a look at the final score. Kerry and Jeremy have 9, but this week's winners with 10 are Francis and Holly. Before we leave you, here is an extract from the sports pages of The Guardian, spotted by a listener called Gary.
The Football Association said there was an act of violent conduct in or around the 77th minute of the game. It's believed the incident concerned Oldham defender Peter Clark, who was struck by an elbow near the edge of his 6-yard box.
And with that, goodbye.
Taking part in the news quiz were Francis Wheen, Holly Walsh, Kerry Godliman and Jeremy Hardy. In the chair was Miles Jupp, and the news was read by me, Susan Ray. The chair script was written by Sarah Campbell, James Kettle and Mike Shepherd, with additional material by Sean Harries and Robin Morgan. The producer was Richard Morris, and it was a BBC Studios production.